What does it even mean to live a legacy? Often we think of legacy in terms of what people might think of us when we're dead, but then we're dead. We're going to instead explore a living legacy. This is your host, Danielle Strickland. This is the Right Side Up podcast. And this is a partnership venture with World Vision, Strong Women, Strong World. This is going to be challenging and inspiring as we interview people from all over the world in all kinds of different sectors, living a life now that will matter later. A living legacy. Buckle up. This is sure to be challenging and inspiring. And I'm glad you're here. Hey, welcome, friends, to Right Side Up. This is living a legacy, instead of leaving one. We're talking about how we live right now. And today's guest is Margot Day. You're going to find out for yourself. This woman is exceptional. She's an exceptional human. She shares straight from the heart. Although her brain is large and active and good, she's paved a way for women in technology. She spent, 34 careers in the tech industry, 17 which were spent as a senior leader at Microsoft, including vice president of U.S. education. She's focused on partnerships and breaking down barriers. She's been a steadfast leader in that. She's been a mentor to women and girls. And then you'll hear her explain how her life, had a shift that brought her to the place now where she says she's living her very best life and kind of leaving it all on the field and spending a life. Now she is dedicating her whole life to eliminating child marriage and female genital mutilation and creating cycles of advocacy and prosperity for women and girls in Kenya. She's a partner with World Vision in that regard. You're going to love her. She's teaching in this as she's sharing. She's teaching gold nuggets of transformation and a power of living a meaningful life now. So with no further ado, Margot Day. Margot, welcome to the Right Side Up podcast. I'm so glad you're here.
It feels great to be here, Diane. Thank you.
Yeah, and we made it happen. I feel like no one knows the struggle that we've seen to get this podcast to go, but here we are. And thrilled that you're here and very excited about what you're excited about. Now, I had a chance to meet you in person. We were sitting on a bus together in New York City. And I was thrilled with just talking to you. You're just filled with, life and hope and excitement. And that's not always the case these days. That's hard to find people who still have this like deep sense of hope for the world. Tell me a little bit, tell our listeners, what are you passionate about?
I'm really, really passionate about having people realize that they are beloved by God. Because when you know that you're loved, it is remarkable then how your world and your worldview can open up and how you can really think about what your role is in the world and how are you going to make a big difference. And so, that's a pretty lofty thing to say. I'm passionate about wanting people to know how they're beloved. So then you think, okay, what does that really mean to you? And so right now, what it really means to me is to help people realize and unlock the potential that they have. And for my philanthropic kind of pursuits, that manifests itself in vulnerable girls and girls who have been dealt cards that say that in their life, they're going to get married when they're 10, 11, 12 years old for the economic gain for a father. And so those things, I just don't think are right. And I think that a girl's life kind of gets, her dreams get snuffed out. And so because I'm so passionate about wanting people to really be able to step into their full potential and have the life that God really wants them to live, I'm passionate about trying to make a difference there.
That's beautiful, because I think what you're hitting right at the start here, which is not surprising, is that knowing that you are loved and valuable and worthy and beloved, that you're welcomed and you're known and you have these inherent values inside of you that are good and holy.
Yeah.
That's the thing behind the thing.
Right.
Like, so it doesn't matter where, but like actually there is this unlocking. I love that term, unlocking. How did this get unlocked in you? I mean, usually we're most passionate about the thing that we've discovered for ourselves, and you kind of just want to naturally share it. How did this, what's your own journey of your discovery of your belovedness?
I just would say that I don't know a day when I didn't really know God. And we, as a family, we went to church, but church for me was more of a formality. And I just remember being around people my age that had gone through and were going through Young Life and these other kind of exploratory things as young people. And I remember somebody saying to me, "Margo, you can love Jesus and Jesus loves you." And it was like my heart exploded, because it was what I always kind of really felt in my soul deep down, but to put word to it, really what was so enlightening. And when I really realized for myself that, wow, I'm known by God, He knows me and my every thought, it just began to open up this whole pathway that I've always wanted to explore and see what's possible. And so it just, when I knew that I was loved, kind of like what you were saying, once you know that you're loved, then you can explore those things that really feed your soul, because your soul is in a good place, because your soul knows it's loved. And that's how it started for me. And so I just have had God open up a ton of doors for me in my life, which led me to this technology career that I had for, you know, 30 some odd years, and which has enabled me to do what I do now. It has enabled me to learn how to lead people and engage with people. And it also opened up the world for me to say that things that look hard, like the hard business problems or hard issues in the technology context, when you know and understand technology, you can think about how you might address those things. And so you take that and you bring it over into, okay, a life purpose that says, why am I living? Why am I here? It's not just to, you know, do cool things with technology, but it's to unlock and help people realize they're beloved and unlock people's potential. Then you start looking at these really intractable issues that you think about that affect women and girls in particular, or children, or people who are living in extreme poverty. And I go, well, I know how to solve these other big problems. maybe with my faith, we can combine all that. And let's see if we can approach some of these other more difficult things as well.
That's so cool. I mean, I think so often, you know, the scientific, technological, you know, sort of that kind of thing has been pitted against, you know, sort of belief and faith. And what you're suggesting is that those two things are beautiful companions. This like curious exploration and like strategy thinking, and, you know, and then applied with this like unlocking potential of belovedness. I mean, wow, that's really cool. Margo, can you tell me a little bit more about your journey in technology? That's not a, you know, you're a bit of an outlier in the technology industry as a woman. Can you tell me a little bit about that and your journey and how you got there? And
yeah, I was, I'll go back to when I was a young lady. I had just graduated high school, and I was going to this church that really had a mission focus to it. And they wanted to open up medical clinics in Venezuela. And apparently there were a number of people in the church that were medical professionals. And the pastor came to me one day. I didn't even think he knew who I was, actually. And he said, "Do you want to learn how to code? Because I believe," and this is 1977, "because I believe that electronic medical records are going to be the way of the future." And I was like, okay, I'll learn how to code. Yeah, kind of, you know, like anything else, let's go see what I can do. And so that got me into the whole technology world. And what I realized, Diane, it was kind of funny, I would get lost in my coding. And there'd be, like, I remember riding my bike and all of a sudden arriving someplace and not even remembering that I was on a bike and how I got there in the first place. And so I thought to myself, if I continue to just code, I don't think I'm ever going to meet anybody because I'm just going to be down in my little, you know, rabbit hole. And so I got actually into the whole sales and business development realm in the technology space because there were so many business needs and opportunities. And I wanted to be able to work with business partners that had the technology chops to be able to solve those issues. And so I always kind of gravitated towards business development, channel management, partner management, and finding the win-win between a couple of companies. And so just through my career and people who I met, I ended up at Microsoft in 2001. And so I spent half my career with Microsoft and then half of my career with other companies. And
those were like the takeoff days.
Those were the takeoff days.
Those were like wow, the whole world's going to be different. We're going to unite the world and save the planet and like technologies like that. Those were those days.
Yeah. And they remained those days. So that's what's so fun about it is the thing I loved about I worked for IBM for a while. I worked for Lotus Development for a while. I worked for Microsoft, obviously. And it was all about being able to solve the big kind of either solve the big
global
issues or the global issues.
Yeah.
You could make a difference globally. You could make a difference on a scalable basis. And so every day, whether it's working with customers, business partners, working with my teams, it was about, well, let's go see what we can go solve. But the thing that also, when you think about like my journey, I led rather large teams. And because I have this faith in me and I really have, I know I'm beloved. I wanted everyone around me, even in the business context, to know that they were beloved, that that they mattered, that I respected them, that I was there to help them as, you know, a coach or a mentor. And it had nothing to do. I couldn't bring in my faith in those conversations, but it is amazing to me how in the secular world, how many things are directly applicable in the faith that we know and love, like living in gratitude and coming from that kind of position versus one that says, you know, oh, woe is me, you know, I'm really bad, or like finding out who you are. I mentored so many people that were on this fast track in technology who had kind of lost who they were. And like, what are you all about? What are your values? What are your goals? What are you passionate about? What are your priorities? What are your family priorities? Like all of those things that I would engage with people in business, then you can directly apply to your own faith. And your faith walk. And so
and you would find that people, and I guess this is true of any profession, but I think specifically professions with big, you know, goals and potential and stuff, is you end up getting swallowed up by an end game that was not your beginning. So you end up so easily getting diverted by making the most money you can or making the, you know, the best achievement that you, you know, and then you're, like you said, you're coaching people going, but why are you, you know, why are you here? What's your purpose? Like, what brings you meaning and passion? What helps you get up with joy? And that's so, you know, that's so fascinating, Margo, on many levels for me, because this season is about living a legacy instead of leaving one.
Yep.
And I feel like in that business world that you're so familiar with, and I love how you're like, I learned, like all this stuff was me learning how to tackle big problems and have an optimistic and, you know, sort of creative solutions mindset and things like that. But I think that idea of like we get trapped into this thinking that is like, okay, jobs are about making money. And then if I make as much money that like fulfills me and then I have some left over, maybe I'll leave it. And that'll be like me being a good person later.
Yeah.
Whereas you're saying, no, actually, this thing that whatever it is you're doing, so even the tech industry, is about you seeing this as an opportunity to live a meaningful, purposeful life.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I think that's a big, I know it feels like a no-brainer when you say it. You're like, well, yeah, of course. But actually, people don't do this. They don't live this way. They get easily sidetracked by things that don't matter. What did you find, like, even in your coaching and stuff, like, what were the signs of that? Or was that ever a temptation for you? And did you make intentional decisions to not go that way?
Yeah, well, kind of yes and yes in a variety of different ways. The thing that I'll say about, it's probably true for everybody, in as you're growing in your career, like sometimes you just feel like, I have to show up this way, or else, because inside I'm thinking, I don't know if I can do this or not. So it's the whole imposter syndrome thing. And so I think we as human beings get really good at living in this world that if my image is this, then I'll be okay. But underneath, kind of stirring around in your soul, things are just in dissonance with one another. And that can only exist in a human being for so long. And then something's going to break. And it just could be, quote, I'm burned out. It could be I'm miserable and I don't know why. It could be, like for me, one day I looked at myself in the mirror and I looked and I said, I don't know who you are. And actually, I don't think I like you very well, because I had kind of put a bubble around myself that most people who I talk to that are friends today, colleagues in those days, they had no idea. And they're like, oh, no, Margo, you are great and all this sort of thing. But I felt like I got swallowed up by who I was versus what God was working in me. And so for me, that was an awakening, and I really wrestled around with God for about 9 months on this one. And man, oh man, oh man, like I had no peace. I had my smile, but I had no peace. And it wasn't like all of that. It just wasn't in my eyes, and it wasn't in my life. And finally, because God knows our hearts, and I kept praying, like, Lord, forgive me. Just show me what to do. How do I do this? And you know, I was feeling like I was too full of myself, and I was feeling like, though, that now I had means that I could do something kind of meaningful. And so that's what we wrestled around with for about 9 months. And finally, one day, Diane, I wasn't even praying, but I heard in my soul, 5 loaves and 2 fish, what you have is enough. And this was in 2009. And I'll tell you what, I had a peace that came over me. That was something that it was like standing in a waterfall and just getting deluged by peace. It was awesome. But I've never felt it like that way. It's like kind of sense. But what I knew was the what you have is enough had somewhat to do with where I was financially. Heading into the Great Recession, kind of scary, all that kind of stuff. But it also had to do with the life path that God had been putting me on. And he had given me skills and experiences, and he was preparing me for a different day. And so that helped me really not become about me anymore. And it became more all about, what is my purpose? What is my place? Why am I here? Let's get really, really clear on those things. And even though I felt like through the course of my career, I had been doing that, but not fully.
Yeah.
Like I wasn't all.
And also that word of like who you are, what you have is enough. You know, is this direct invitation off of a never enough cycle?
Yes.
You know, which is, you know, I've read or I listened to this podcast one time of this rabbi breaking down the creation account. This is a bit of a rabbit trail, but I think it might be worthy for people listening and helpful maybe. But where basically God, when he creates everything, when he does the Sabbath, he literally is done creating because it's enough. It's like a Hebrew concept of he's like, this is very good as it is. It's enough. And then the rabbi said every derivative of sin, like every brokenness, every pursuit that is unworthy, every whatever this is a derivative of not enough. And that like blew my mind because I think oftentimes we think of like the word sin has been so co-opted to be like bad things we do that God doesn't like, you know, no. But this idea that the brokenness in our hearts and like the trajectory of our lives and this like endless pursuit of never enough, it could even be good things. Mm-hmm. And that's what I love about, you know, so many of the things that you're saying is even as you give yourself to this beautiful thing that God's invited you to give yourself to, even in Africa, you know, with these like to end child marriage as a purpose. Yeah. That's a beautiful purpose. But you could apply that same principle of like never enough and like trying to make it about you or you doing the right thing or you under judgment or you under fear or you working out of all these insecurities or whatever, as much as you could in the tech world, you know, so that like insight that like actually you are enough and you have enough. And from that place of abundance and from that place of belovedness, this is where now we start living meaningful lives.
Yeah.
I think that's a game changer word. You know, obviously, I mean, it changed your trajectory in terms of what you decided to do.
Yeah.
Can I, and that idea of like, it's enough, God's enough, we're enough, you have enough, you know, that and tuning into that voice, you know, that's a fierce battle. I'm so glad you looked in the mirror and I'm so glad you didn't just look away in shame or fear, you know, and just carry on pretending. I'm so glad you took the time to wrestle it out and then hear a word that is a divine one that liberated you. Amazing.
Yeah, then God puts you in a place. Thank you. And yeah, because when you live authentically, you can breathe. You have your everything about how you live is so right. You're not you know, hiding the thing or holding back. You're living in this authenticity of how you are beautifully and wonderfully made and what that means. And then you can really step into your purpose. And then the resources that you have, including financial, they become secondary. And I think that's where, you know, I love partnering with World Vision and finding them in a way that allowed me to express my desire to show people that people would experience that they are beloved in a non-judgmental way by helping to solve these really hard issues of extreme poverty and then situations that they find themselves in. And so, like, I think about my life today and the partnering with World Vision and with other people as well. My God, I mean, I thought I had a great life before. I mean, I really did. Like, you know, I family, travel, money, you know, da 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 blah. But poof, when my life is like 100 times, maybe even 1,000 times better than it was in 2009, A, because I'm living authentically, B, I feel like my love of God and my knowledge of God in how he actually works in this world and how for why he ever called me to step into my purpose. But wow, is that ever a blessing to walk in that? That makes life really rich. And then when you find people like you or you find other people that have that are minded the same way, you end up in community with one another. And it really is amazing. And I guess the other thing too I'll say is I traveled to World Vision, I traveled to Kenya with World Vision in 2009 when I was like after wrestling with God and I was really trying to figure out like what I wanted to do. And they took me to a rescue center for girls. And we're driving out like on these bumpy, dusty roads. And I had seen all this other amazing work that World Vision had done. And we're going to a rescue center for girls. And I'm like, oh, Lord, what are these girls being rescued from? And they said, well, in this culture, it's not only child marriage, and the betrothals start when the kids are 7, 8, 9 years old, but they actually have to endure female genital mutilation as well. And I'm like, what? What's it? What? What? And so we go out to this rescue center and there's 34 girls there. They're 8, 9, 10, 13, 14 years old. And they start telling me their stories about how they ran away because they didn't want to be married off. They wanted something different for themselves. And the stories were just absolutely harrowing. And then, you know, it's like anything else. When you start talking to people and you look into people's eyes, you feel their humanity, right? And you feel like they're as beloved as I am. And my whole worldview, however I had constructed my life, even though I thought I'd like, yay, here God, here we go. It was like I had had this brick wall around myself where I was the person that was going to come in and help. And man, when I heard these stories and when I looked into these young ladies' eyes, I just realized that when I was their age, I would have not had the bravery, the courage to do what these girls had done. And my whole world changed. And it was like this brick wall just broke down. And I thought to myself, I could have been one of those kids. But I wasn't. So, Lord, you put me here. What do you want me to do? And that's how this whole thing started.
So we've been listening to Margot, and she's an exceptional human who's given her life over to end female genital mutilation and child marriage in Kenya specifically. And there is a thing called Kenya Big Dream around empowering Kenyan girls to know they are worthy. This dream is big, but it's achievable within our lifetime. This is World Vision's Kenya Big Dream, okay? And its chief aim is to eliminate female genital mutilation and early child marriage everywhere they work in Kenya. This is a people dedicated to this. This is like dealing deep into root causes of why these things happen and changing people's minds and hearts and practices. It's phenomenal. As a matter of fact, Margot just told you it's worthy of a life. And if you want to join this and support the work that she gives herself to and the work World Vision is doing in Kenya, this is the way to do it, specifically around eliminating and ending the oppression of FGM and early child marriage. So it is worldvision.org, Kenya Big Dream, okay? worldvision.org/Kenya Big Dream. You'll Google it, you'll find it, and you could be part of a group of people who are audacious enough to believe that we could end these practices in our lifetime. Let's join and actually do this stuff. All right, back to the show.
Yeah, it's almost like if you think about being born again as this opportunity to like see the world differently and like know the world differently and know God and know yourself differently. And then you have these more moments, like born again, again, again. I feel like people think that's one time, but I feel like that one time is just a first time and that there's more of these times that happens. And you're describing this like again moment of connection that's global, of like the walls breaking down between us and them, the idea of you being at the center of the story instead of just one part of the story that's unfolding, of a courage and a bravery and a strength that you need and you're going to get from 12-year-old girls. You know, like those are all like that. I love that, walls breaking, mind opening, heart, you know, engaged and broken, and then a new way, a new way. And so, Margot, when you share that story, I was going to ask you, you know, how did you land on that specific issue as your core? That's how, I guess, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we went and saw clean water projects. We went and saw the work that they were doing. There was a famine going on. And so I saw, you know, that kind of relief. I saw work that they were doing with people that had HIV AIDS and, you know, had to do economic empowerment kind of work so they could afford the drugs. I mean, I saw all of this and my heart was moved. There's no doubt about it. But it was these girls. And then what echoed in my soul was, this is your 5 loaves and 2 fish. And so, you know, at first, candidly, what I was going to do, I said, look, what do we need to do? And what I learned was that there were no high school, secondary schools for girls. And usually girls would get pulled out of primary school, if they went at all, at the age of 7 or 8 to get prepared to become a wife. And so, but then once they hit 13 years old, there was no place for them to continue their education. I was like, oh my God, these girls have just run away from this. They're at a primary school at a rescue center right now. What's going
to
happen?
There's nowhere to go.
Oh,
right.
What do you do? And I thought, oh my gosh,
right?
They're going to die or get whatever it is. They're going to get beaten up or whatever. And so they said, what we really need is a secondary school. And and so I was like, okay, what does that cost? What do we need to do? And I'll share you the amount. It was $400,000 that would in that day cost to build a secondary school for a couple hundred kids. And I just thought, I'll do it. But what Real Vision said to me, they said, can you see doing at least half? And I said, yeah, I can. And I'll talk to my financial guy and just tell him. But if I get, I'll figure out if I can do it all. But here's the beauty of all this, and the reason why I'm kind of belaboring this point, is when I got back to work, everybody knew that I'd gone on vacation and all this sort of thing, and I'd done a safari too. And everybody's like, how's your time? And I was like, you know, the lions ate stuff and the gorillas were great. But let me tell you about these kids. And what that ignited in people was people said, can I help too? Can I help too? And the thing that I began to realize was, in my own personal philanthropy, I've always been, up until that point and even several years into it, I'd always been pretty private about what I do. You know, the Bible says, don't flout this, don't talk about this or that. But what I realized once other people started to get involved and give and see what the progress was and kind of be on this journey, it changed their lives too. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, man, if I don't share where I'm finding a huge source of joy and purpose, then with somebody else, then I might be denying them a life-changing experience for themselves, or even a way for them to begin to go down the path and explore for themselves what is the thing that they're passionate about as well. And so part of this kind of rebirthing that you're describing, or always thinking anew, is challenging old assumptions as well. I better be private about my philanthropy. I need to make sure that I take care of myself, and therefore, you know, that box looks like this, and that box can't be any smaller than that. And not allowing God, not because you're seeking the blessing, but what I find is that the more I give, the more I make. And not only in my own life, but like my investments and the choices that I make in my investments, they grow kind of in an outsized kind of way. And the more I put at his feet in that way, because he's given me the gift of a fairly good brain and a network and stuff like that, then the finances that I have, kind of like the 5 loaves and 2 fish, when you lay it at his feet, those things get multiplied. And you always have enough. And even the whole concept of enough changes, you know, too. So life really becomes really interesting when you can begin to kind of step out in a faith that is scary, that is like kind of like maybe Peter walking on the water. Maybe it feels like that to some people. It did to me. And even realize if you sink a little bit, it's okay. But he's there, right, for you.
I love that idea, too, like in the story of the loaves and fishes in the scriptures, of course, not only do 5,000 men, so it's probably about 10,000 people get fed, but then there's leftovers.
Right.
You know, and then, and literally, and Jesus is like, get the leftovers, let nothing be wasted. Like, so even that it, now it's from you are enough and I'm enough for you. This is your journey to now as you test that, as you live that, as you see that happen, now you're like, oh, there's more than enough. Yes. You know, like, so you're literally moving into this, like a movement of abundance, yeah, which is fascinating that you would get there by working, you know, against extreme poverty.
Right.
And this is, I think, one of the miracles that is really hard to explain to people. When we actually we're wealthy and we're on, you know, trajectories of abundance in a material sense.
Yeah.
And so we see poverty through the lens of scarcity. And then it's not until we actually change our trajectory from this like ascension into this meaningful, you know, descension of like, how can I actually go the opposite way? How do I give it away in meaningful ways? How do I contribute down in meaningful ways instead of the climbing up? And then it's there that you discover abundance and like true abundance, which is this, you know, it's about money, but it's way more than money. And there are things that you're experiencing that money just cannot never buy.
Yeah.
And never get you. I also love how, I love that reframe of like, tell people about what you're telling them about is not how great you are. And what you're telling them about is not what they should do. You know, there's not this like, hey, you should really help kids in Africa because you're like selfish or something. What you're telling people about is what you're passionate about. What you're telling people about is what's making you come alive. What you're telling people about is your heart, you know, your heart's desire. And that, you know, that's what people long for.
And I want it. And I want them. I want them to... I have a fullness of life that I never dreamed would even be possible. Yeah. And I want everybody to have that or more even, yeah, right? And so, yeah, like, why would I hoard my own experience in that way, you know, if you will? So, yeah, there's that to it. The other point that I'll also make, too, is this concept of giving now versus waiting till you die. And it goes back to the five loaves and two fish. Because not only is it from, like you were saying, the position of abundance, but I also think that those five loaves and two fish that were the miracle then are still happening today. And the way that I think about even my own financial position, yes, I want to live comfortably. Yes, I would prefer that I can help people versus always having to have people help me. So like, I'm not going to sell everything I have and then like move in with my family or something. That said, so that all said, what I came to really see in the eyes of the girls that were, whose lives are transforming in such amazing ways because of this Kenya Big Dream and the work that World Vision is doing, is there is the kingdom on earth today. And so I'm responsible for today, my life today, how I am today. I'm not responsible, if you will, for what might happen in 50 years because I'll probably be dead. And so I would rather give all, I would rather not leave this earth with a whole lot of leftover. And know that I have, through God's guidance, given where he wants me to give, and then let somebody else who is on the earth 50 years from now,
who is on their own journey, right?
Yeah, their own journey. Yeah. It's like, let's help today, because what I've been able to see is girls who I met who at that time were 12, 13, 8, 10. I know those girls now. And I see what their lives are like now, and I see what their communities are like now. So if I would have held back then, that would have never happened. And so I just keep thinking about, let's live today. Let's live in the way that God wants us to be living and working today. Let's bring all of us and our 5 loaves and 2 fish, because that was the full lunch that that little boy had. Yeah. Let's bring it all. Yeah. And then let's see what God does with that. And then, like Jesus said, pick up so there's no leftover, so that other 5 loaves and fish miracles can happen too. Yep. For other people. That's kind of how I think about this cycle, is that way.
That is so cool. I mean, it's inspired. It's, as I suggested, it's inspiring talking to you, Margo, and inspiring learning from you and your own experience. Thanks for being so willing to share it. And not just here with us, but also like with everyone you meet. I love that you just, the stuff is just exuding from you. You know, it's not something you've like prepared to say. It's like literally like, it's coming out of me. We ask this one question at the end of each podcast, which is, if you could give yourself at a younger age some advice, you know, what would you do it? What would you say to your younger self?
Yeah, what I would say is, one, don't let fear hold you back. Two, nothing in God's economy is small or large. And so bring what you have. So you don't need to wait. Start now. And the third is, always remain authentic to who you are, the identity that God has given you, and walk in that.
Wow. Beautiful. Man, I wish I was 25 and just listening to you. I feel like it could have helped me so much.
It could have helped me glad. Too.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That question is always so tricky, because you know, wisdom and experience is such a great teacher, and you just kind of wish you could. So hopefully people are listening now and you're hearing this and you're thinking, wait, I can do these things. Yeah. I can pay attention to this. And it might be, you know, it might be a bit of a wrestle to get there, but don't hold back from that. Go ahead, wrestle, and get to a place where you land like Margo, living your best life that you could ever dream, because you're doing what it is you were made to do, and you're doing it out of love and not for love.
Right.
And that's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Thanks, Margo.
Thank you so much.
No women, no Moses. You want to study the work of God that has liberated women for as long as time has been tracked? We're going to parallel the women in Moses' world to those in Jesus's and in ours. This is a beautiful study. How we envision this working is either to inspire yourself and to challenge the way you think, and actually to give you lenses to see the scriptures maybe in a new way as this liberating movement of God continues to move throughout history, even to current day. This study features people from Uganda working to end child marriage, and people in Afghanistan who are working with fragile contexts in Hong Kong, and young entrepreneurial nonprofits, and you know, pastors and teachers and artists and advocates, Joe Saxton and Tiffany Blum and Betty Lynn Dickinson, and allies. Michael Frost even joins us. Noemi Chavez. I mean, this is incredible. And it's 4 weeks long, and it's designed to be a group study. Ideally, you grab some friends and you do this together. If you're looking for a guided version of this, we're going to be releasing dates for a guided cohort that can study this together. And I'd love to lead that. So stay tuned for those details. But the Liberating Move of God is available on danielstrickland.com. You can find it there. You can also find it on World Vision. This is a partnership, but it is, I don't know, it's mind blowing. I could take this course over and over and over and over again, and I helped design it. So there you go. I love it. I highly recommend it. And I hope it helps you go a little deeper into the ways and movements of God so that we can join him today. There's still stuff to do. So enjoy that.